Okay, we're starting from today, Bechor Lamed Hey, at the top of the page at the Mishnah. Okay, we have an interesting Mishnah. I would say a little atypical. It starts talking about a maaseh. Okay, something may happen. Maaseh b'zachar shel rechelim zaken u'sa'aro midoldal. There was a case where there was a male, I always forget the names of all these animals. Oh. Rachel is a, an ewe.
Yeah,
a ewe. Okay.
But isn't a ewe female?
So it's the male version of the ewe.
A ram here.
A ram? Okay. Okay. So it was a very old ram. Okay, what was the case? Why was it so old? Because it was a bechor, and it didn't have a mum yet, and they had to just wait around. So it was this very old ram, usaro medoldal, and its hair was very long, because it's asur begisav avoda. So it had tons of hair, and, right, so it looked a little odd. Vira'uhu kastor echad. So a Roman officer sees this animal that looks quite odd. Vahamar mati voshel zeh. Says, what on earth is going on here? Amrulo, so they said to him, bechorhu ve'eino nishchat elim ken haya bo mum. Says it's a bechor and it can't get slaughtered unless it has a blemish. Natal pigum v'tzaram ozno. So he took a utensil, I don't know what it was exactly, a romach, a sword, and he cuts off its spear and he basically makes a blemish on its ear. So now, what's the status of this? Right, generally we say if you're matil the mum on purpose, it's not allowed. Well, bama selef nechachamim v'hitiro, and they matured it. Now, seems that the Mefarshim tried to explain that what happened was here was that he didn't do it, okay, you can see, he didn't do it because he wanted to help the Jews. He did it because he was mocking them. He said, oh, you know, you're waiting. First of all, to say that he did it on purpose would be difficult. Why? Because they told him we had to wait around for it to get a mum, which means that it won't help them if he puts the mum in, just like, you know, if they could have done it with their own hands, they would have done it themselves. And the question is, how much of halacha does he know? It sounds a little like Amira La'akum, right? Where, you know, you can't do it yourself. Were they kind of hinting to him, oh, well, we can't get it, right? We can't do it unless it has a blemish. So it seems that according to the Peshat, what happened was, and we'll see from the continuation, they were just telling him why it looked so strange. Yeah, they weren't trying to hint to him, to allude to him that he should do this. And some of them, Freshman, actually say he was mocking the Jews by doing this. But the problem is that if you say he was mocking the Jews when he did it, he wasn't doing it to help them, the continuation of the story seems odd. So the story continues. So basically they brought this animal and they said, ah, now you're okay, it's a bechor with a mum. Well, once he saw that it helped them, he said, ah, now again, according to the version that he was kind of being mean to them and mocking them, it seems strange. All of a sudden now he flips, and now he decides to help them, and he starts going around to all their animals that are firstborn. How he knew they were all firstborn, I don't know, but he starts, you know, making blemishes in their ears. Ve'asro, but then the Chachamim said, this is already forbidden. Okay, why? So you have to explain what was the difference between the first case and the second case. Right? That's why the Mefarshim side on saying that the first time he did it, he wasn't really intending to do it, because if he was intending to do it the later times and we didn't allow it, then why did we allow it the first time? You know, one could distinguish between a one-off and a continuous act. Although, again, that's why the Mefarshim tried to side with saying, at least some of them say, that the first he wasn't intending to do it to help them, and the latter ones he was. Okay, so again, it depends, according to that, it depends on your kavanah. If your kavanah is intentionally to cause a blemish, then we don't allow it. If your kavanah is some other reason, which we're going to see connects with the next case, if you weren't intending specifically to blemish it, but you were intending, or you weren't intending to blemish it, in this case, he was intending to blemish it, just not intending to blemish it, to matir it, to allow it, then we're going to allow it. Okay, but again, that parshanut is a little difficult because it doesn't make sense that all of a sudden he would be mean to them and then all of a sudden be nice to them. Next case. Pam achat hayu tinokot mesachakin besadeh. Okay, a bunch of kids were playing in the field. Vikashruz navet la'im zebazeh. And they tied the tails of the lambs to each other, right? You could see kids getting into trouble, doing some troublesome, you know, troublemaker acts. Vinifsikaz nevosh alachamehem. And one of the tails of one of them tore off. And that created a blemish. Baharehu Bechor, and it turns out that one was a Bechor. Ubama Selefne Chachamim Bitiro, and the rabbis matired it. Again, what was lacking here? Intent to create a blemish. So then they went and said, oh, let's do this game all the time, because look, we can be matir animals in this way. And again, they forbade it because this already became more intentional. Now here you see this is indirect, right? It's a little different than the first case, but it's still a matter of intent. Vizaklal, and as usual, you know, not as usual, but often we get the zaklal. Kol shehu ledato asur, shelo ledato mutar. If it was intentional, then it's right now. Ledato could be a little tricky. Was it the intent of the person doing it or the intent of the person who gave the orders? And as if we go back to the first story and we say that in the first story, when they told him, they weren't telling him the way we would, you know, let's say you would try to allude or hint to a non-Jew about Malacha and Shabbat, not getting into how and when you can do that and whole big topic, but the fact that there's some issue of hinting. In this case, the assumption is they weren't hinting to him, but after that, once they saw it was mutar, then already it became more begedir hinting, even though it's interesting, they don't actually say anything to him after that. It sounds like he did it on his own initiative, but you have to assume somehow there he was already trying, you know, his intent became maybe equivalent to the intent of the people somehow. You'd have to say, again, like I said, that case is quite tricky. Okay, pam acheret haya v'chulei. So now the Gemara goes back to these cases and says, why did they bring the second case, pam acheret, right? Another pam achat. It's interesting. In our Mishnah it says pam achat. In the Gemara here it says pam acheret. But, it doesn't, pam acheret would mean there was a different instance of the same people almost. So, therefore, you can see that the Hagahora Bach changes it. It should be pam achat. So now the question is, why did you need both cases? Utsricha, why do you need both cases? De'iashmina nove kochavim tiloate lemisrach. Aval katan ta'ate lemisrach emalo. If you just had the ove kochavim, you might have said, well, he's not going to, right here the intent is he's not going to continue to do this because he's not going to ever become chayav b'mitzvot, right? So we're not really worried that he's going to continually do this, even though, right. In other words, he actually was continuing to do this, so it's a little strange. One second. Right, but I guess since he's not Jewish, we're not really concerned about him continuing with this prolonged bad behavior. Aval katan da'ate lemisrach emalo. But a katan who's going to eventually be a gadol and chayav b'mitzvot, we don't want to teach him that he can, you know, somehow do an act that's going to cause a mum. V'yesh minan katan. Mishum de lo ata le michlepe begadol. As you might say, a katan will allow it because he's a katan. And we're not going to come to say, oh, well, a gadol can put a blemish in an animal on purpose. And avalove kochavim de ati le chlufe begadol. But if we allow the non-Jew to do it, we might think, since he's a gadol, then we might allow a gadol to do it, emalo, and therefore tzriche. That's why we need both cases. Amarav chista amarav katina. Lo shanu ela de amarle ela imken hayabo mum. Avalim amarle im naasebo mum, kemanda amarle zil avibe muma. Zil avibe muma dami. Okay, what does this mean? Rav Kuska looks at our Mishnah, or he says Rav Katina looked at our Mishnah. And notice the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah was that what did they say to him? In other words, now he's going to get very nudniki into the wording of the people, of what they said to this guy. And that the reason why the rabbis matured it was specifically the way they worded it, because the way they were wording it indicates. Okay, let's see what it indicates. It says here, Einoni, right, they said, Bechorhu, ve'einon ishchat, elem ken hayabomum. They were basically telling him, unless it has a blemish. Okay? But they didn't say, elaim na'asabomum, because if they said, if a mum was done to it, right, not passive but active, then one could assume that they were hinting to him that he should do it. Right? But if they said, unless it becomes blemished, then already they're almost indicating that if you do something, it's not going to help us because it has to happen on its own. So he specifically says it's that wording and not any other. If they had said, na'asabomum, then the rabbis would never have allowed this case. Okay? Then it would be like Right? By saying im na'asabo mum, if a mum happens to it, that will allow it. It's as if they kimanda amarle, they're like one who says, zil avibe muma, go do the mum, and that would be more direct. This again, if you get to Amir al-Akum, can you hint or not? So, you know, the question is, what would be hinting, what would not be hinting? Amarava, michte mimelehu, mali haya, mali nasa, ela nasa, nami mimelehu veloshna. What do you mean? A mum can't, right? A mum is going to be relevant. Right, the mum that he, since the intent of the Roman officer was not intentional to actually put a mum, it was mimela, that like he was kind of doing some act that was going to then cause the mum. But what's the difference whether he said hayabo or naasabo? No matter what, he wasn't intending to put the mum. And therefore, right, ela naasanami mimelehu. In other words, naasabo mum also means if it becomes blemished. It's not such a big difference in the wording, and therefore veloshna. It doesn't make a difference. And don't take the Mishnah at face value that only if they said it in this particular way. But even if they had said naasabo mum, a mum happens to it, that's also sounding somewhat, you know, indirect, kind of it happens on its own, and therefore I'd disagree with you. Okay, now we're going back to that last line. Every time we have a line, zehaklal, which comes to explain something that we could have figured out on our own in the Mishnah, what's it coming to lechadesh, to add something new? So, la'atuye mai. So now we're going to darshan each part, because it said zehaklal, and it said the flip, right? It said, kol shu ledato asur, shelo ledato mutar. So each section must be coming to teach something new. If it was ladat, but even if it was indirect, that would still be a problem, right? Like the case of the children. Exactly. Shalolada'at is to include the case if somebody just says something, right? Like lohayabo mum, or, you know, unless it has a mum or something like that, where he's explaining, you know, kind of, this is the situation, but not actually trying to tell someone to put a mum, so that would be included in the case where we would allow a mum, which is very similar to the case in our Mishnah, where they kind of were just telling him, by, you know, he asked a question, they answered him.
An innocent statement.
Exactly. Okay, Mishnah, new Mishnah. Hayah b'chor rodfo. Let's say the b'chor is chasing you. And in order, right, an animal's chasing you, what do you do to stop him? Well, you might injure him, right? Ba'ato vasabo mum. So now the question is, look, you inflicted the blemish on purpose, but you didn't inflict the blemish in order to create a blemish in an animal so that it would be mutar to you. You did it to protect yourself. Hareze shochatin alav. So we allow you to slaughter this animal. Amar of Papa. Lo shanu ela sheba'ato b'shat redifa. That's only if while he was chasing you, you put the mum, you know, you attacked him, kicked him. Avala acharidi falo. But if the animal was chasing you, and then he stopped chasing you, and then you were still angry at him for chasing you, so you went and wounded him as a result, right? Your anger is still there. Then lo, okay? Then we're not going to allow that. That's already, it's not self-defense at that point. So then the Gemara says, pshita, isn't that pretty obvious? So they say no, because mau detema sa'arehu demidkar. Now, maybe, again, what's the guy's intent? The whole question is, what was his intent? When he was, after the animal finished chasing him, he wanted to kind of punish the animal for having chased him. He was angry at him. And because of the pain he caused him, he was kind of, you know, he was attacking him on account of that, which means that his intent wasn't to inflict a blemish. And therefore, kamashman, you might have thought, but the answer is no. You know, so you have to be careful when it's a bechor not to inflict a wound, right? If you're doing it out of self-defense, fine. But once the self-defense issue, right, this is kind of like shooting someone in the leg or shooting them, right? If you can shoot them in the leg, do it that way. If you can, you know, once you're already, it's no longer self-defense. That's a little different because that's b'shat ma'aseh. And then there's all debate, right? Whatever. I'm not going to get into that. We have that whole debate in Sanhedrin. But here, it's already past the ma'aseh. You're no longer fighting in self-defense. That's not going to be allowed. But that's the first version of Rav Papa. The second version holds the opposite. Ikadam Ram Rav Papa lo tema Don't say bishat redifa'in, aval shelo bishat redifa'lo. Don't say what we just said a second ago, according to the first version, that it's only while he's chasing you, but if you were to inflict a wound after he finished chasing you because you were just angry at the animal and you hit him, that's not allowed. We won't allow that wound. No. Ela afilu achar redifa'nami. Even after he finishes chasing you, still if you inflict the wound at that point, right after, we're going to allow the moon. We're going to macho the animal. You can slaughter it. My taima, sorry, who demitkari? He wasn't intending to inflict a wound, right? A blemish. He was just punishing him for the pain he caused. Amar Rav Yehuda, mutar lahatil mum bebechor kodem shiyatza la'avir ha'olam. This is in fact what we do today, which is before the bechor is born, while it's coming out, you can inflict a wound. Okay, very interesting. Amar Rava, gadya be'odne imra besvate. Okay, a gdi, a baby goat in his ear, and a baby, is a baby lamb? A baby lamb with his on his lips. Ikadamre imra nami be'odne. Some people say also that even the baby lamb, you do it on its ears. Why? Because imor derech tzda'av nafak. It comes out with its temples first. So as its temples are coming out, and the whole issue is, how is it born? How does it come out of the womb? In which case, right, what's the first place that you can... What you have to have is, remember we learned all about the Rosh, once the Rov Rosh comes out, so then it's already considered born. At that point, it will be Bechor, and you won't be able to inflict a wound. So you have to come up with a situation where you can... where it starts to come out by its temples, but Rov Rosh isn't out yet, and then you can cut its ear off. Right, or make a blemish in its ear. Amar Rava, achal velo michze, pai umichze havi muma. If while it's eating, you don't notice the mum, okay, this is in terms of what kind of mum can be considered a mum or not. If while it's eating, you don't notice the mum, in other words, if it has a mum inside its mouth, okay, because we talked about bisfate, if it has a mum inside its mouth, and while you're eating, you can't see it, but pai umichze, but when it what's the word, pai? It like yawns, kind of opens its mouth wide.
Cries out.
That's what it is. When it cries out, you could notice it because then its mouth opens much bigger than when it eats. Have muma. That's a mum. So then they say, my kamash malam. Why is Rava coming to teach us this? We already know Tanina. It already says this in a, if it's a Braita, I'm assuming it's a Braita. It's a Mishnah? Okay. It says it. Right. We're going to get to it very soon. Fitapin. Hachutin achitzoniot. Okay. These are the outer gums, meaning the gums that you can notice more, right? The front gums. Shenifgemu. Vishenigmemu. Okay. That were wounded or they were, I think this means they were cut, like they had cracks in them. Hapnimiot shenekru. And the inner ones, which means further back in your mouth, the gums over there, shenekru, that were uprooted. Might, okay, those are all mumim. My taima, la mishum dekipai mechze, right? What about the back ones? The back ones, why on earth would they be a problem if nobody even sees them? It must be because when the animal opens its mouth wide, you can see them. In which case, it teaches us the exact same thing as Rav, and Rav doesn't need to come teach us something that says an explicit Mishnah. Amara Papa, Rav nami tama demetnitim mefarish. Rav was just trying to give us an explanation of that Mishnah. My time on ekru havimuma mishum dekipai mechze. Right, instead of saying, "Oh, Rebbe, why do you need to say this if the Mishnah already said it?" Well, the Mishnah didn't give a reason, so he was saying, "Oh, the reason for that Mishnah is because when it opens its mouth, you can see it." Okay, new Mishnah. Kol mumin ha. Okay, we're gonna. This I started it on the sheet. You can look at the sheet, charted all this out. Okay, we're gonna have a Mishnah, and we're gonna have two different explanations of the first opinion of this Mishnah of Tanakama. Okay. There's three opinions in the Mishnah. There's Tanakama, which splits into two different cases, Rashbag and then Rabbi Meir. Kol amumin haruin lavo bide adam, ro'e Israel nemanim. Okay, any mum, okay, there's types of blemishes that would never happen. A human can't inflict that wound. But we're only talking about wounds or blemishes that can be inflicted by man. So now you have an animal with that blemish. You have to wonder, this goes back to trusting people, you have to wonder, did the person inflict it themselves, or some person inflict the wound, or not? So, kol amumin haruin lavo bide adam. So, just talking about that category. Ro'e Yisrael ne'emanim, Ro'im kohanim einam ne'amanim. Regular Yisrael shepherds are trusted, and kohanim shepherds are not trusted. Okay, that's what the Mishnah says. We're going to have to see exactly what does it mean Ro'e Yisrael and what does it mean Ro'im kohanim. There's two options. It could mean a shepherd who's a Yisrael versus a shepherd who's a Jew. Versus a shepherd who's a kohen. Or it could mean a shepherd who works for a Jew, who's in fact a Kohen, and a shepherd who works for a Kohen, who's in fact a Jew, Yisrael. I keep calling him Jew because it's Yisrael, but a regular Yisrael, okay, non-Kohen. So those are going to be the different interpretations here, what this means. Rashbag omer ne'eman hu al shel chavero ve'eino ne'eman al shel atzmo. Anyone is trusted when we're talking about, right, if he works for somebody else, or he's talking about his friend's animal, we can always trust him. When it comes to him testifying about his own animal, we can't ever trust him. Rabbi Meir Omer, ha-chashud al hadavar lo dano velo mi'ido. Anyone who's suspect about an issue, which would mean in our case, Kohanim are suspect. Who's the main suspect in these cases? A Kohanim. Why? Because the Bechor belongs to the Kohen. The Kohen wants to shecht it. Therefore, he's not trusted when it comes to blemishes. Therefore, lo dano velo mi'ido, which means what? He can't be a judge in the case. That's not so relevant for our issue. But he can't testify for anyone either. So therefore, any Kohen can never be believed. Right? That's what he's basically saying. So now we have to explain what the first case of the Mishnah means, and therefore, what are the three different opinions? So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, okay, the following Amoraim had a debate about what this Mishnah was. We don't know who said what. Chad Amar, the first interpretation is, Ro'ei Yisrael bei kohanim ne'emanim lilegima lo chayshina. If you're a shepherd who works in a Kohen's house, you're a regular Israelite shepherd, you work in a priest's house, you're ne'emanim to testify that there was a blemish that happened, and the blemish happened on its own, and nobody inflicted the blemish, because, now what might you think? Now remember what we learned based on Beit Hillel. Even Yisrael can eat bechor. Now, if he's living in the Kohen's house, maybe the Kohen would give him a piece of the meat. Lilegima lo chashina. The fact that the Kohen might give him a little piece of this meat is not going to be reason enough for him to lie. He's not going to lie for the little bit that the Kohen will share with him of this animal. Not worth it to him. Okay, right? This is all about, you know, what would you lie for? What wouldn't you lie for? So therefore, that's what it means. When it says Ro'e Yisrael, it's kind of how we understood in the beginning. He's a Jewish shepherd who works for a priest. Okay. Ro'e Kohanim, now the second case was Ro'im Kohanim Einam Ne'emanim. Now the Ro'e Kohen who works Bei Yisrael, and the Yisrael owns the Bechor, why is the Kohen not Ne'eman? Right? They're Ein Ne'emanim because Meimar Amar, Kevan de Katarachna Bei Lo Shavik Ledidi V'yav Lachrine. Right? What is he going to say? If I work for the Kohen and he's got a Bechor and he has to give it to me, so... Right, he has to give it to some Kohen. Who better to give it to? Right, it sounds like Haman, right? When Achashverosh asks him, you know, what would you do for someone who respected the king? And he says, so who better would he do it than me? I'm right in front of, right? I'm the guy. So here also, the guy works for the Yisrael. So of course, if he's going to give the Bechor to someone, he's obviously going to give it to me. He's not going to go give it to some other random Kohen. So therefore, he's no longer, because... likely he will get it if it has a mum, right, or even just the bechor in general, and then it will go to him to eat, so therefore he's not trusted. Vehu adin kohen lekohen dechashin on the gomlin. And a kohen is also, let's say you work for another kohen, or you're his friend, you're not believed because there's a concern that maybe you'll split it 50-50, because you'll say, hey, listen, I'll matir it, I'll testify for you, and then we'll split the animal 50-50 between the two of us. Va'ata Rabbi Shimon leMeimar. So according to that logic, basically we're going to say, right, Kohanim are never Ne'emanim, and only Ro'e Yisrael is Ne'eman. So comes Rashbag, and what does he say? Ne'eman o'al shel chavero ve'eino ne'eman o'al shel atzmo. Right, a Kohen can testify for somebody else. He's just not Ne'eman on his own. Va'ata Rabbi Meir leMeimar. Now what did Rabbi Meir say? Ha'chashura la'davar lo dano ve'lo mi'ido. Now this is going to be a little tricky, because according to this, what does it mean? A Kohen is never Ne'eman, which sounds just like Tana Kama. So we're going to have a little bit of a problem. What's the difference between Tana Kama and Rabbi Meir? We're going to get back to that. You follow that? Because both of them say the Kohenim are never believed, not for themselves, not for anybody else. So we'll have to deal with that. Bechan Amar, the other one explained it like this. Ro'e, and maybe because of that problem, they had to give a different explanation. Ro'e Yisrael v'hein Kohanim. Okay, Ro'e Yisrael means, right, a Ro'e Yisrael v'hein Kohanim, meaning a Ro'e of a Yisrael, and he is a Kohen, meaning a Kohen shepherd, is Ne'eman. Now, this is going to be interesting. Why is he Ne'eman? Here we're going to have a Kohen who's Ne'eman, because Me'mar Amar, what did we say before? If he works for the Yisrael, he'll assume the Yisrael will give him the Bechor. No, now you could say the exact opposite logic. Lo shavik tzurva me'rabbanan b'yad l'didi. I'm just a lowly shepherd. He's not going to give it to me. He's going to go give it. First of all, not only is he a lowly shepherd, remember, shepherds were lowest on the hierarchy of society there, certainly in the eyes of the rabbis, because they were, you know, they didn't know anything. They couldn't testify. They couldn't. They were considered, you know, safek azlanim. They weren't knowledgeable people. And he'd rather give it, this is in the rabbi's world, to a talmid chacham, right? In other words, of course, he's going to go find a kohen talmid chacham, give it to him, and leave me out of it. So therefore, he's actually believed because he has no stake in the animal. Ro'e kohanim behen Yisrael, but now the flip case, which is a Yisrael works for a kohen, the ro'im of the kohanim, and they're Yisraelim, einam ne'manim. Now you have to explain again the reverse logic. The Yisrael shepherd who works for a kohen isn't believed. Why? Dechashina lilegima, dafka the opposite. Right? Dafka we are choshesh, because he'll get a little bit of it because he works for the kohen, which means he gets to eat the kohen's food. So because of that, he wants some meat for dinner. You
or
know, and therefore,
wants to please the boss.
Yeah, or he wants to please the boss, also could be. V'kol sheken kohen lekohen dilo. Here we're going to have, and therefore a kohen working for a kohen can't for two reasons now. One, dechashin on the gomlim, as we said before, maybe he's going to make a pact with him and he'll end up getting 50-50. And dechashin on the legima. He thinks that maybe he'll give him a little piece of it and that will also. So therefore, for sure, that case. Now, in that, then, ate Rabbi Shimon, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, lemeimar, ne'eman al shel chavero ve'eno ne'eman al shel atzmo. Right, according to this, again, I kind of bolded the main line in the chart. Right, according to this, the first Tanakhama says a Kohen's believed if he works for a Jew, Yisrael, and a Yisrael is not believed if he works for a Kohen, and a Kohen's not believed if he works for a Kohen. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes to say exactly what we said before, which is Kohanim can be believed for others, right? And others can be believed for Kohanim, anyone, right? As long as you're testifying about somebody else, you can be believed. V'ata Rabbi Meir l'meimar, ha'chashud al ha'davar lo dano v'lo mi'ido. Kohanim were always chashudim on anybody, right? So Kohanim can never be believed, which also seems to apply Yisraelim can be believed, right? Where again, according to the Tanakhama here, there's a real disagreement, because in the Tanakhama here says a Kohen's believed if he works for Yisrael, and Rav Meir says Kohanim are never believed. Okay, so there you have the disagreement. So again, Bishlama, the Gemara is going to say exactly what I said right now. Lamanda Amar, which is the second Manda Amar, the second explanation. Ro'e Yisrael behem Kohanim ne'manim. Hainu da'ata Rabbi Meir lememar ha'chashuv ala davar lo dano v'lo mi'ido. There's a real disagreement there, because Tanakhama thinks the Kohen's believed if he works for Yisrael, because there's no chance. The Kohen doesn't think there's any chance he's going to get that Bechor, and therefore he's believed. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, if you're chashud, you can't ever testify about anyone else. Ela lamanda amar ro'e kohanim be Yisrael ein emanim ma'ata Rabbi Meir lashmuina and hainu tanakama. Now we go back to our original question. According to the first reading, we're going to end up saying that a Kohen's not believed, whether for himself or for another Kohen, or for anybody else. And Yisrael is believed because it was his lo chashina l'legima. So there you have it, that they say the same thing. So we're going to have to figure out what's Ika B'nayu, and this isn't going to be simple. Rashi and Rambam disagree about what exactly this is. Ika B'nayu to Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai. Okay, they debate the issue that Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai raised, or his opinion. Ditanya. Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai Omer. Now we're going to have a braita with three opinions, and then we'll go back to explain it. First, we'll just read the whole braita, and this is charted out in the next chart. Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai said, "Bechor be kohen, if there's a bechor in the house of a kohen, tzarich shnayim min ashuk la'id alav. You need two people from the outside to testify about this." Okay, we'll get back to this in a minute, how this connects. Rashbag Omer, Rabbi Yoshua ben Gamliel Omer, afilu beno, afilu bito. People in his household are trusted in order to testify about this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Asara, Behem Bnei Beito, Ein Mi'idin Alav. Rabbi Yossi says, even if there's 10 people, and but they're household members, they can never testify about him. Okay, it has to be outsiders. Now, first of all, Rabbi Yossi sounds a little like Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai, because he also says, you need Shnayim in Ashuk, which sounds like you can't use people in your household. So according to Rashi, the chidush of Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai is that anyone in the Shuk is Ne'eman, which even means a Kohen is Ne'eman. Okay? So now, how does this relate to our Mishnah and the first Perush? We have to come up with a difference between Rabbi Meir and Chachami and Tanakama. So what did Rabbi Meir say? Hachashuda ladavar lo dano v'lo mido. So he would say, even two people from the Shuk are not believed if they're Kohanim. Because, right, what did we say? According to Rabbi Meir, Kohanim are never Ne'emanim. It doesn't matter if they're B'nai Beito or not. Tanakama was talking specifically about the B'nai Beito. And he said, Ro'im Kohanim that work for Yisrael are not believed, and a Kohen that works for Kohen is not believed. That means Kohanim are not believed, but only if they're working in the house, right? But if there's someone from the Shuk, they would be believed. So Tanakama at least agrees with him that a Kohen, that a Ro'e Kohen is not Ne'eman, right? He actually disagrees, though, about a Ro'e Yisrael. In other words, the problem with Rashi's interpretation is that nobody fully agrees with Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai. Because what did Tanakama say? A Ro'e Yisrael is Ne'eman. And what did Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai say? No one who works in the Kohen's house is Ne'eman. It has to be someone from the outside. So Rashi has, there's a little difficulty in Rashi according to that, but the way Rashi sets it up, he says that Rabbi Meir lately to Rabbi Yeshua Legamre, he fully disagrees with him, and, right, Tanakama partially agrees with him and partially disagrees. The Rambam says that the Machloket is Dafka about a Ro'e Yisrael, that a Ro'e Yisrael Rabbi Meir would not accept, like Rabbi Yeshua ben right, like he holds like Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai that you need Shnayim min Ashuk, and here it's the opposite. Dafka Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai according to the Rambam, because the Rambam, because what is Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai saying? No one in the household is believed. So Tanakama, who say we believe a Yisrael, would disagree with Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai. And Rabbi Meir, who talks in general that anyone who's chashud is not believed, is basically saying anyone who lives in your household is chashud and they're not believed. I think the Rambam is a little stronger here. Anyway, that's two different interpretations about how to understand who holds like Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai and who doesn't. Now we're going to bring a statement of Rav Chista in the name of Rav Katina and say, who does this go according to? Kiman az lahada amar Rav Chista amar Rav Katina, safek bechor. Now we're going to deal with a safek bechor case. Until now, who have we been suspecting? Only Kohanim were people who work for Kohanim because the Bechor always goes to the Kohen. Well, the Bechor doesn't always go to the Kohen because if you have a Safek Bechor case, what do we say? Safek Bechor, you're not sure. Hamotzi mechaber alav haraya. Remember, we had a whole long Mishnayot about this. Because the Kohen can't prove that it's his, so you have to treat it with Kedusha Bechor. As soon as it gets a moon, though, the Yisrael is allowed to eat it himself. So in a Safek Bechor case, okay, Rav Chista, in the name of Rav Katina, says, Safek b'chor shenolad be'Yisrael, if it's born in the house of Yisrael, tzarich shnayim min ashuk la'id alav. He is not believed to say that the mum happened on its own. You need two outside people to confirm this, okay? The owner's not believed, nobody who works in his house is believed, okay? Because, again, he's chashub b'davar. So who does this go according to? Now, we're not talking about the opinions in our Mishnah. We're talking about the opinions between Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai, Rashbag, and Rabbi Yossi about, are the B'nai Bayit Ne'emanim? Is it, right, do you need two people min Ashuk? Can they be even a Kohen? Or maybe, right, or a Filo Asara, according to Rabbi Yossi, Behem B'nai Beito, Emi Dima. So, Kiman, this must be Rabbi Yoshua ben Kapusai, because what does he say? You need Shnayim min Ashuk. Sounds exactly the same. Rav Nachman actually has a different opinion about this, and he's going to try to prove it. Rav Nachman amar ba'alim mi'idim alav. No, the owners are actually trusted to testify about this. Okay, this is classic case of eidecha ne'eman bisuin. Right, someone comes into your house to eat. Okay, why are they allowed to eat in your house? Because you're trusted. So why wouldn't we trust this Yisrael that he says, I didn't, you know, I wasn't Matilda, this movement happened on its own. So here comes Rav Nachman and he proves it. He says, De'ilote mahachi, ma'asir l'Rabbi Meir, mi me'id alav. If you're going to say that we don't believe you, then how could anyone ever be trusted to say that you can eat, right, that I took trumot and maschot? In other words, when it comes to b'chor of a kohen, you could say, fine, we don't believe the kohen, but we believe anybody else. But if you start to say that in a safek b'chor case, we can't believe Yisrael, then it means, let's take the parallel when it comes to maser behema. What's maser behema? You have to take the tenth of each animal, right? You have to slaughter it in Jerusalem. And if you, right, unless it gets a blemish. So how are you ever going to let anyone testify? Maser is for everybody to eat. That means when it comes to blemishes, we'll never trust anyone because we make the analogy. Bechor is to Kohen, as Maser is to everybody. So therefore, no one will ever be believed to say, oh, this isn't Maser Behema, or this was a Maser Behema that was blemished. And you'll never be able to trust anybody. So then they say, no. You can't compare Bechor to Maser. Why? Because if someone really wanted to put the blemish in the animal in Maser, okay, and allow it to not have a case of Maser, he had a better solution. Okay, what could he have done? Maser Vadai Behema, this is always, we can believe someone about something because they could have done something, right? Something else. Dibai, if he wanted to, Shade Beimuma Bakule Adre. It's interesting that they suggest this. It's hard to imagine someone actually do this. It sounds a little like our first mission we started with the Roman officer who came and did this to all the animals. But he could, in theory, inflict a mum before the year ended, and that would lahalacha. And it's, what's the issue? Once you've mastered the animals and you have the tenth, you can only sheft it if it gets blemished. Okay? But, and only if it gets blemished on its own, not if you put the blemish in the animal on purpose. But, lahalacha, if you inflicted the wound on the animal before you did the maaser, right, before the end of the year when you do the maaser behema, you could have inflicted a wound in all your animals and you would have been patra from maaser. Since he didn't do that, we could trust him to say, oh, I didn't inflict this blemish. So, that proof doesn't really work for Rav Nachman. So now we're going to give a different proof. Ella safek b'chor l'Rabbi Meir mi me'id alav. But then we can basically never have anyone be me'id on the b'chor. B'chi tema hachanami delet le'takanta. Maybe you'd say, maybe you're right. Safek b'chor can never be eaten. Maybe you're right. Now it's according to Rabbi Meir, maybe he holds that since you can't ever trust anyone, this would only end up being really, there is a limit to this case, which would say in a case where the mum was an obvious mum. How do we start our Mishnah? It said in the wording of, kol mumin haruin lavo lide adam. Okay, but if there's mumim haruin lavo, the lo ruin lavo lide adam, then you would have a case of suffering before you could eat. But I guess they're assuming that most of the blemishes can be inflicted by a human. And therefore, how could you have a case of a safek b'chor? No one would ever be able to testify that. Now, maybe you would say then, safek b'chor can never be eaten by Yisrael. So, b'chite machanami, delet le'takanta, that really, a safek b'chor, yes, it stays with the Yisrael, but he can never eat it because he can never prove that the blemish wasn't inflicted by him. But there's a Farish Mishnah that we learned already that seems clear that Rabbi Meir holds that you can eat it, okay? When we talked about safek b'chor, V'hatnan, Shaya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Shechalipav B'yad Kohen, Pator Min HaMatanot, V'Rabbi Meir Mechayev. Okay, let's just start with the simpler. Rabbi Meir says, in a case, this was a case where there were two, you had two animals, one was, two animals came out, two animals were born to one, two animals came out at the same time, or, you know, almost at the same time. We don't know which one came out first. So, Misafek, we give one to the Kohen and he keeps one, right? That's what we call Chalipav B'yad Kohen. One ended up in the hands of the Kohen and one didn't. So Rabbi Meir says you're Chayav B'matanot. Why? Mimanafshach. Either the whole, this whole animal was the Bechor, in which case the whole thing really belongs to the Kohen, or it's not belonging to the Bechor, in which case you're Chayav B'matanot. When are you Chayav B'matanot? When you shech the animal. What does this prove? Rabbi Meir holds you could shech the animal. Because otherwise, how could he be mechayev matanot? Obviously, you're allowed to shech the animal. That's our proof. What's Rabbi Yossi's opinion? He says, no, in that case, you're patur from matanot. Why? As long as you gave the kohen one and you took the other, it's as if, remember what happens? It's as if you bought, kind of the kohen bought rights to the one that you have and sold them back to you. And when a kohen sells you a bechor, you're patur from matanot. Okay, or so kohen sells you an animal, sorry. You're patur from matanot. So therefore, it's as if, we look at it as if the kohen owns that one and he gave you his, he kind of gave up his rights and sold you his rights to the other, in which case you wouldn't be chayav in matanot. But anyway, what do we learn from here? Shema mina ba'ali mi'idim alav. Right? You can see that we do testify. So that's his proof that we do allow the ba'alim to testify about their own safek b'chor when they're a Yisrael. So we say here, kohanim, right? Why is that? Kohanim hu dechashide amume. Yisrael lo chashide amume. He makes this general rule, which is only kohanim or suspects to say that mumim, you know, we're always choshed kohanim. Because of this one case of safek b'chor, which happens once in a blue moon, we're not going to say we suspect Yisraelim about this. Okay, only kohanim or suspect. Okay, which it's interesting, first of all, in light of all the corruption that went on with the kahuna at the end of the time of the Mishnah, one could see why maybe also they were suspicious of kohanim in general. Kohanim didn't have a great rap. Maybe that's also connected. Okay, going back to how do we paskin on this machloka between Rabbi Shoba and Kapusai, Rashbag and Rabbi Yossi. So, itmar Rav Nachman amar halacha ke Rashbag. We hold like Rashbag that even your son, even your daughter is trusted. Okay, you can see Rav Nachman is l'shitato. He said the Baalim can testify about their own thing. He said when it comes to a Kohen, even his children can testify. I lost my place. Okay. Rava amar halacha ke Rabbi Yossi, that afilo asara behem b'nei beto ein me'idin alav. He holds the opposite, really. Anyone in the household can't testify. So now they're going to question Rava. Umi amar Rava hachi, v'ha amar Rava, ba'alim omdim b'chutz. Rava said that if the ba'alim are out, omdim imanu b'chutz, they're outside with us, nichnas shalem, and the animal, the b'chur, went in whole, v'yatza chavul me'idin alav, and came out wounded, okay, blemished, people can testify about it, that the blemish happened on its own. So, that sounds like what? Who's going to testify? People from the shuk can't testify about something that went inside on in the guy's house. So if the owners are standing outside, and presumably there's b'nei bayit in the house, so they can testify about, right? B'nei bayit could include workers, children, right? They could testify about it. So how did Rava say that? And yet he said, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, afilo asar Rava hem b'nei beto ein me'idin alav. Ema, you read it as this: Kol ba'alim omdim b'chutz v'lo cheshina. All the owners are standing outside, and we're not suspect. Okay, there's a few different interpretations of this. It means basically that either Rashi says Kol ba'alav is banavu b'nei beto omdim imanu b'chutz u'me'ir alav ro'esh haya b'bayit. When Rabbi Yossi says afilo asar avehem b'nei beto, it's not including a shepherd. It means family members, household members, but not outside workers. And it was the outside workers who were inside that saw. Some people say, no, it was that everybody was outside. I think it's a better explanation. All the whole household was outside. And therefore, we can assume that if there was no one inside to inflict the wound, then obviously it happened on its own. And that's why we can do it. But it wasn't a case where anyone testified, right? It just says lo cheshinan. So, ihachi my lememra. Well, if that's the case, either which way, you know, what's it teaching us? It's obvious. So they say, you might have thought, now again, chashada is going to be dependent on how you interpret it. Either maybe you would think that the ro'im are, that we have to distrust them, kamashmalan shelo, which matches Tanakam in our Mishnah, that a ro'e Israel is not suspect for the little amount he's going to get of it. Or the chashad that maybe, what would be the chashad if everybody left the house and nobody was inside when the animal went in? What would the issue be? Maybe there was a chashad that they put, remember we saw if you put figs, these pressed figs on the ear, or you put something, right, or the dough that by grama, maybe they caused the wound in a grama way. Kamash malan, that you don't have to worry about it. Okay? V'hilchata kerashbag. V'davka b'no u'bito, okay? And the psak halacha is like Rashbag, afilu b'no afilu bito. But Now they say, we'll end with this. Aval ishto lo, my taima, ishto kegufo dami. We can believe children, we can't believe the wife. Okay, so here's a case where this, by the way, is very classic. Right? Generally, kids don't lie, right? Generally, kids are very honest. But already the wife, we're worried that she's going to be as suspect as the husband is. They're considered one. But children, we can believe if they tell us because we're not worried they're going to lie for their parents. This also sort of depends on the society. There's some societies where, you know, children are taught to kind of lie for their parents. And if, you know, there's a, you know, in other societies, children in general are very honest. They'll say it exactly as it is. They don't really have that concept of, oh, I need to hide something, or, you know, it's kind of all out there.